Hey, Flipside, it's Charlie, and this is the long-awaited Live at Super Monster Movie Fest 2021 episode. Unfortunately, we had a couple of mishaps. We recorded the show live on radio, which was a first for us. We ran across some issues as we only had one output, which was either left or right. So we only had, even though we were recording stereo, we were outputting just a mono track. So that caused some issues. Fortunately, we recorded straight from the Personas into the computer, so there was no output. So the episode you're about to hear is going to be in stereo, so that's good. But we had some issues with recording. And so the first couple of minutes of Mark and I discussing movies got cut off. So here's what happened. I'll fill you in. We were talking about the Drop Dead Fred Blu-ray and kind of the everything that was going on with that, which you'll get the tail end of that when we come back to this. But for those who don't know, Mark Hoik, he is a film historian. He writes for the New Beverly Cinema blog. He does the movie trivia Schmodown. And he is a former movie geek from Comedy Central's Beat the Geeks. And he's in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood for a little bit. So he's kind of a big figure and he knows a lot. So this episode is a lot of fun because he really lays down a lot of knowledge. So yeah, stick with us. Thanks, guys, and we apologize. And next time, we have solutions for how to make the episode better when we do record live at the Skyline. So this was a learning experience, and thanks for sticking with us, guys. Yeah, and it was weird seeing the Universal and Severin spine where they were sharing the same, you know, they were sharing a logo. And Severin was going to put it under their kids' label, which is hilarious, but fitting.
Yeah. Well, because it's not the first time that Severin's been able to get a license from a studio they don't normally deal with. Last fall during Black Friday, they did a limited run of Buddy Giovinazzo's No Way Home, and that movie for home video is still controlled by Lionsgate. But one of the big guys at Lionsgate is a longtime fan of Buddy Giovinazzo, and they decided, okay, we're not going to be doing anything with this movie in the near future. We'll let you have like a very limited pressing as a favor to Buddy. And so it was available during the Black Friday sale. It briefly popped up again during another clearance sale, but it is, you know, currently not available from Severin.
Yeah, and, you know, I think a lot of people were pissed off and were, like, confused because it got taken down from the site. All the shit started going. I think you were the first to kind of speak up and say, you know, hey, this is probably because some sort of fuck up with the licensing. So
yeah, because, you know, sometimes you know, Peter doesn't talk to Paul about who they paid.
Yeah, so that's what's going on with the Drop Dead Fred Blu-ray, if anybody's got excited about that. Sorry.
So but again, it's going to come out. We just a different label, and they haven't announced a street date.
Yeah, and that was the first time I've heard people, like regular people you just happened upon, talk about Severin, because I had a buddy at a gas station in Knightstown that was talking about how excited he was for the Drop Dead Fred Blu-ray. And I've never heard any, you know, usually it's inside people talking about Severn and all that stuff. But that was the one that was really going to break the mold for him. It sounded like. I don't think Overboard did it for him, but
yeah,
we thought maybe, you know. Well. And then, so we're talking about the two lows. The next one is the Cruel Jaws fiasco, where they and they've done this before, but I this was the first time on such a mass scale. But they did Cruel Jaws is obviously a Jaws rip, Italian Jaws ripoff, but they advertised it as Jaws 5, and that was quickly smited by Universal.
To be precise about Cruel Jaws, because a lot of people were running around with misinformation and half truths and such. When Cruel Jaws was made way long ago by Italians in Italy, they released it as Jaws 5 because it's harder to police that sort of activity there. There have been a lot of fake sequels released in Italy that had nothing to do with their movies, and the American studios were hampered in terms of what they could do about it. So Cruel Jaws was, however, notorious for the fact that it had lifted footage from, I don't recall if it's the actual original Jaws or one of the Jaws movies that Universal owns, because a long time ago, Scream Factory was going to release it on Blu-ray, and
yeah, it was like about, a double bill.
About 9 hours in, they said, nah, it's too risky, we're not going to do it. And then ultimately, Severin released it, and they did a promotion where if you pre-ordered it within a certain window, you could get a slipcover that had the Jaws 5 title treatment that Italy created, but only if you did it then. You couldn't get it at retail that way. They were practicing due diligence.
And they've done this before, but usually it's just vending, I've noticed. Like, they did that with a Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3 or 2 or something like that, but it was Night Killer.
Night Killer, was that in Italy. These were all Italian things where, the Italian release title was hacking off of some big American franchise like Texas Chainsaw or Evil Dead or Terminator or something.
Right.
And they did custom slip covers for the for a certain number of pre-sale
online. They did.
At their website,
okay.
You couldn't go to Diabolic and get it. You couldn't go to,
and you could get it at their vending table. Which I thought they only did vending table. Which that would be smarter if you only did it while vending. That would be harder to police, I would think. But anyways, Universal was not pleased.
Everybody is conjecturing that it's Universal, but. When Drop Dead Fred got canceled, Severin made a statement, but Severin has not yet issued a statement about Cruel Jaws.
Right.
So
we've been led to
we are causation does not equal circumstance, or I'm mixed up on my C cliches. But people are basically taking two and two and coming up with five. That they're thinking, okay. Universal pulled the plug on Drop Dead Fred because they'd already made a deal. Maybe somebody at Universal found out about Cruel Jaws and, sicked the lawyers on them, and they pulled it. Now, that is entirely one possibility because it does seem logical. Another possibility might be that, maybe somebody had an objection, but they're, for the time being, pulling it so that they can, because they have not issued a statement, which means they're probably trying to work on some stuff behind the scenes, hush-hush, and say, look, guys, it's minimal.
It's just so many units.
Millions of dollars. We'll pay you something to make this go away, or we'll license some other movies from you, because to have a comparison, a few years ago, MVD started doing their own Blu-ray releases in addition to rack-jobbing other labels. And one of the first titles they picked up was this Australian surfing movie called Wind Rider, because in Australia, it was represented by Umbrella Entertainment. And they were opening up talks with MVD to try and start putting stuff out in the States. However, in America, Wind Rider is owned by MGM. It was it was during the 80s when they weren't doing a whole lot of major movies, but in order to fulfill their contractual obligation pipeline, they were buying lots of stuff, you know, little cheap indies, releasing them in a few theaters, and then taking them straight to video. So MGM came to MVD and said, hey, you know, we own Wind Rider. You can't put that out. But MVD turned it around and said, well, what if we licensed it from you and licensed some other stuff, like Double Impact with Jean-Claude Van Damme and some other. And so they ultimately came out with Wind Rider and some other MGM titles. So,
yeah, I would like to think that's how things work, that there's a misunderstanding, and then they're like, let's work it out just man to man. That's what we want.
Yes.
Because we want as much stuff to come out as possible.
Yeah. Nature abhors a vacuum, so because Severin has not made a statement, everybody is just kind of, you know, shot calling it without, you know, without having the truth.
Yeah, and then for the highs that Mark mentioned would be I assumed you meant the folk horror Blu-ray box set.
What an amazing set
that's going to be great.
I've got my pre-order in for that. I am so excited for...
Me too. I've got my pre-order.
Yeah.
So we'll review that on the show then, sounds like.
Mm-hmm. But to give you a taste of what's going to be in this 13-disc, 20-movie set, first off, it's going to have the very highly touted 3-hour-plus documentary on folk horror directed by Kayla Janisse, who has been mounting incredible screenings in Canada and the United States for years. She has done the terrific book on female-oriented horror called House of Psychotic Women. She has done DVD commentaries and all sorts of supplements from other people. This is her directorial debut. It started off as it was just going to be a bonus feature on the limited run Severin disc of Blood on Satan's Claw, and it just kept expanding to the point where Dave Gregory said, oh, we should make this, it's a standalone project, and it's just won a prize at Fantasia. So this is going to be a really interesting documentary all by itself. But then the box set...
And you can buy it separately. You can buy just
yes. Yeah, if you don't have a spare $180 lying around, you can just buy her documentary.
And you can rent it right now. I mean, you can watch it now.
Well, I think it was in festival play, and so it was available during the run of the festival.
Online, but, because they were doing the online stuff.
Yeah,
that could be true.
It has not yet officially been released to the public. So there was limited availability, and I think that window's expired. But this set is including all manner of folk horror movies from around the world, many of which have never been released in English-friendly editions. You know,
Before we go too far with that, though, why don't you explain folk horror for people that might not?
Well, folk horror is a subset of horror movies that usually deals with a commonly accepted myth amongst a small community of people. The idea of an outsider going into a small town and discovering, you know, peculiar behavior among the locals and some deep, dark secret and, you know, revelations therein. The most obvious example that everybody probably knows is the original The Wicker Man with Christopher Lee and Edward Woodward and Britt Eklund.
Ingrid Pitt, too.
Pardon?
Ingrid Pitt.
Oh, yeah, let's not
in the bathtub. Ingrid. I don't... Ooh, God. Mm-hmm. That's a great...
So
it's already hot enough as is. We don't need to be talking about Ingrid Pitt in the bathtub.
Yeah, or folk horror has been a big mainstay of TV movies. You know, you had stuff like The Dark Secret of Harvest Home with Bette Davis. You had, you know, arguably even The Stepford Wives is kind of in that. It's more it's more technological.
What about video violence? Would you consider that?
Well, I think maybe under a generous reading that folk horror is usually represented by, you know, a small town, probably not technologically advanced, you know, married to old ways, lots of religious imagery, lots of country imagery,
mm-hmm.
you know, so, but it is very malleable in terms of what kind of country it can represent, you know, that, you know, England, it can be, the pastoral lands and, with, you know, of Ireland. In America, it can be, you know, redneck country, or it can be, you know, little tiny enclaves in Maine, or, and in other parts of the world, it can be something else. And that's what's exciting about this set, is that there are certain movies in it that are semi-familiar to anyone who has haunted a video store from the 80s onward. Like, the big coup of the set is Avery Krauss's Eyes of Fire.
Yeah, which, and that's got some incredible imagery if you want to pull that up.
Yeah, Avery Krauss was, you know, not quite a fashion photographer, but he was an art photographer. You know, he wasn't a born filmmaker, but he made a couple of movies, and this was his debut, and it's really got a striking eye and a way of storytelling that is different from other people. And it was, you know, a staple of the video stores during the VHS era, and it's never received a DVD release anywhere since, so this is going to be the first time for that. Also in the set, a mid-90s movie that I'm kind of fond of called Clear Cut with Graham Greene from Dances with Wolves and Die Hard with a Vengeance, about logging interests trying to infringe on Native American territory, and one member of a tribe who abducts the man responsible and subjects him to supernatural forces. That it was not marketed as a horror movie. It was marketed as kind of a, eco consciousness movie, and, you know, kind of, you know, sucker punched people with the horror elements. So that's going to be in there. A couple of Australian movies of the 80s. Celia, Child of Terror, about a child driven insane during a rabbit infestation. Allison's Birthday, which has been a long-desired Australian horror film, you know, that hasn't been revisited since the VHS days. The Dreaming, which, you know, it's popped up on DVD from time to time, but this is, you know, the first major upgrade in a long while. There's a couple of BBC TV movies, one of them directed by Alan Clark, who later went on to direct the influential juvenile delinquent movie Scum with Ray Winston. That there's an embarrassment of riches on this set, and I
plus
am just
you got 15. It said 15 plus hours of shorts.
Yeah,
so that's pretty incredible.
Of shorts of interviews, commentary tracks. There's poetry readings from Linda Hayden from Blood on Satan's Claw, which played
last night. And Witch Hammer, the ones I'm most looking forward to is Witch Hammer, which is kind of like is it French or is it Italian? It's a foreign. It's a lot like a Horror Hotel, except more imagery, but it's got that same aesthetic, that sort of foggy black and white thing going on with it, with the witchery and stuff. And then V, which is based off of a Russian short story. by a Russian author that I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce, which would be pretty impressive if I could. I'm a big fan of his stuff, but unfortunately his name's like a mile long because, you know, Russians.
Yeah, I dare say that V, spelled V-I-Y, so I hope...
Yeah, we're not talking about the TV show.
No, not you know, not the aliens are among us, you know, lizards in human skin. But I dare say that V is kind of the source material, was kind of the unofficial source material for Paranorman, or Paranorman's a much more, you know, kinder version of V, because it's about, you know, an innocent reading over the dead.
And yeah, the short story's a lot different from the movie. So in the short story, these Russian young adults are on break from college, and they decide to stay in this town, and all this stuff happens to them, and they get possessed and stuff like that. Whereas the movie's just kind of like this soul guy that's going in, and he's trying to save a church, but he's underqualified, I'd say. Mm-hmm. So that's a good movie. And so this set is definitely something you want to buy. Now, you know, with Severin, with the Al Adamson set, and with Andy Milligan set, I mean, those do sell. You know, we had a lot of people say, "Oh, you'll be fine. You can wait on that." But they sell out, you know. And so I would say get on it if you can. If you can't, you know, you can wait. You can wait a little bit longer, obviously. You can usually wait a little bit after the street date, which the street date for this, now this is Severin, so let's not set this in stone. But Severin has a release date of December 15th.
I think that's when it is supposed to actually, you know, hit retail.
Yeah, so... But, you know, the Al Adamson set, which COVID had a lot to do with that, but the Al Adamson set was released quite a few months later after the street date announcement.
Yeah.
But that's all due to shipping. I think they got the shipping stuff all figured out now, so we might get a smooth delivery of, you know, it's not called the full chorus, it's called, like, Dark.
Yeah, it's got a beautiful, sort of evocative title none of us can remember
now. Yeah. So,
but if you Google Severin Folk Horror Box Set, you're going to find it.
Yeah, it's pretty easy to find. And then it is, after shipping, it's 180. Or maybe it's 185.
Oh, I think after shipping, you might be cracking, you might just be cracking 200 because of the way it needs to be packaged.
Yeah, that's something else I don't know much about that, but they said that they're going to have special packaging.
Mm-hmm.
Not just special packaging, but special way of how they're mailing it out.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is...
It's going to come in like some cool parcel or something.
Yeah, there's a lot of care being put into this. You know, this is something, this is something you might want to, you know, put on the coffee table to, you know, impress your friends with, you know.
Yeah,
it'll be a conversation piece, like fine art.
Yeah, it will be, and I think there's a deluxe version too that you can
that's
buy.
Sold out.
There's only 200 units.
The Witch's Bundle already sold out.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
Yeah,
that one,
I pre-ordered that one. You know,
that was every girl's. What would you call? I don't know if that's goth. Yeah. This is just me being ignorant. I'm not taking a punch out at anybody. But, you know, girls that are into, like, the pentagrams, mm-hmm. and the... Not goth, but maybe,
yeah,
like...
Yeah, well, it's got... I don't remember everything. I don't think... It has a card deck. I don't think it's a tarot card deck, but it is. It's got imagery from all the movies on the cards. It's got a... plate replica of imagery from one of the movies that's not in the set but mentioned in the documentary. It has a replica of a necklace from Allison's birthday. It's got
a pin of Barbara Steele, who is...
No, I think the Barbara Steele pin
was in the last
promo. Oh,
no, you're right. That's the Franco. That's the Nero Franco set.
Yes.
I'm sorry. That's my bad. But if you get that, I want that pin because it looks cool. Plus, you know, Barbara Steele is going to be in tonight's
Black Sunday,
also known as
The Mask of Satan.
Yep. So that's going to be a great... I love that movie. Mm-hmm. If you like Black Sunday, you're gonna like Witchhammer. I would consider that to be pretty similar. But so the full core set, I don't think we can say enough good things about it. Just on the idea of it alone.
We will say that, again, if you don't have the spare $200 lying around, the Kayla Janisse documentary will be available by itself. Eyes of Fire will be available by itself.
V's already available by itself.
V is already available. And there are older, lesser picture quality editions of The Dreaming that can be found. You know, but so there's workarounds for, you know, people who, you know, can't afford to take the big plunge, but, you know, if you can, you're going to have a really rich, invigorating movie experience.
Most of them yards or something like that. Just so you know, Flipside will be reviewing that. So, and we usually got a pretty quick turnaround on those. We had the Al Adamson set completely watched and ready for review pretty shortly after. And this is, you know, this is us sitting down watching it full undivided attention. I don't want you to think we're half-assed and rushing it, but we do. Just so you know, for future references, we will be watching that complete set around the street date. We will have that done, and we will have a review up, so you can check that out with us. Hopefully we'll have the first, like, you know, like, set review that's reviewing each individual film. Now, I know Severin's got a lot of its podcasters that it has everything out, and they're going to get the set way before we do, because I know Severin has a podcast, and they were already talking about the Christopher Lee set way before we ever got it. So, but they do a great job. They talk about, their podcasts talk about, you know, what their work, it kind of documents the process of actually releasing the movies.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not, that's a great podcast to check out. But if you want to check out honest reviewers, just in checking out each movie individually, packaging, all that stuff, we do that. So we've done that for the Al Adamson set. We've done that for the Andy Milligan set. We're going to be doing that for the Bill Rabane set. So, and we actually went above and beyond for the Bill Rabane set because we're going to review every Bill Rabane movie.
Mm.
There's one movie we're waiting on, and I think Tony might have it today, but it's Bigfoot and Captive or something like that.
Okay.
So, once we get that, so yeah, stay with Flipside to get, you know, all the latest on good reviews, good honest reviews, because we don't have any connections with anybody, so we're just going to be honest. But I don't see me saying much too bad about the full core set. Mm-hmm. Even if there's some duds in there, it's like, well, I mean,
yeah.
If you think about it, you know, you're paying about $9 a Blu-ray,
mm-hmm.
which isn't bad. $9 a movie,
and you know, like if there is one that doesn't click with you, just consider that, hey, you're seeing something that you never would have been able to see otherwise.
It's, right,
you know, wasn't going to be something that you could, you know, find on YouTube or, you know, on a Mill Creek package or, you know, that it, you know, it's, you know, there's duds that don't work but are interesting because of their rarity, and then there's duds that, you know, are so familiar that you feel like you've already seen them before you're even 5 minutes in.
Yeah, and also this one's been announced for a little while, but of course, you know, Street Date's not out yet. But there's going to be a Shaw Brothers Blu-ray Collection 1. I think it comes with 20 movies, or maybe it's 12. I can't remember. But anyways, Shaw Brothers, I always call them the Hammer Horror of Kung Fu. They are kind of this cheap yet effective company that was making kung fu movies, just like churning them out like they were nothing. And, the kung fu movies,
appropriately enough, they did a couple projects with Hammer.
Yeah, and they did most notably the Seven Golden Vampires. But the Shaw Brothers are definitely something you want to check out and get, because those have always been kind of a hard thing to get in the States.
Oh yeah.
For a while. I mean, if you're into Shaw, if you've been into the Shaw Brothers before the set was announced, and you were, you know, if you were into it, like, let's say, like 2004 or earlier, it was like, man, it's so, I want to watch all these, but it's like, it's tough because yeah. it's hard to find them.
Yeah, you know, the Shaw Brothers had like 800 movies that they produced when yeah. they were an active concern, and they had no real U.S. division, so... Like, nobody's going to take on their entire library. It's all going to get piecemealed a little here, a little there. And, you know, you're already dealing with, you know, a genre in the martial arts where there's not as many. We know more names now because people have made the effort to get, you know, educated about them. But, you know, at the dawn of the home video format, you know, if your name wasn't Bruce Lee, nobody gave a damn. So
yeah, and the set that Arrow announced, there's some top quality, maybe even some might say best Shaw Brothers movies. But I, you know, when I saw the movie titles, I was excited, but also I was like, they're holding back. And I know they're holding back because they want you to be able to buy Volume 2. They don't want to release Volume 1 and it be like the best of the Shaw Brothers. And then,
right.
and then 2 is just kind of like, yeah, these ones are okay. So they're going to save one, but, you know, they've got some, I would say they have like two big, big heavy hitters, like top five Shaw Brother movies. And then
the other ones
are like, why, there's a one that's real wild one, you know, that's really cool because it's just so crazy. And then they have a few that are a little more tame, but you can tell that they're holding back so they can make more volumes.
Well, let's throw some titles at them. I mean, what do you recall from the box that grabbed your fancy?
From the box set?
Yeah.
Well, Five Fingers of Death is on mm-hmm. there.
AKA five, King Boxer.
Yeah, Five Deadly Venoms is on there, as I recall. So that's a heavy hitter. That's like one of the heaviest hitters.
Yeah, those two were really influential in drawing in the curious people of America who, you know, were already piqued by, you know, stuff like that Bruce Lee was doing to, like, okay, let's see what other people are doing. You know, King Boxer got picked up initially by Warner Brothers and released as Five Fingers of Death. And a lot of, you know, a lot of people don't recall that it's Five Fingers of Death that first used the Quincy Jones theme from the TV show Ironside as their, like, danger signal in that movie, and of course that was paid homage in Kill Bill, because you know, martial arts movies were notorious for stealing music.
Yeah, because you have the wah, wah,
yeah,
that's wah,
the opening strains so, of the TV
that's,
show.
That
yeah, yeah, because that was, you know, that's where you see, you know, Raymond Burr laying out in the street in a puddle of blood.
But you know, some other, like, big titles that aren't on the box set that I think will be on, like, Volume 2 or, you know, consecutive volume would be, like, Come Drink With Me
mm-hmm.
or One-Armed Swordsman, stuff like that.
Well,
so,
is it,
that's what I'm
is it Mighty Peking Man or Inframan that's on the first set?
Yeah, I think it's Inframan is on that first set.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping that they can get access to the crazy American dub track that Joseph Brenner did.
Well, you know Arrow, I'm sure. They're the Criterion of Boutique. Well, Criterion is the mm-hmm. Criterion of Boutique
yes,
labels, but I would say Arrow's.
Some of these Shaw Brothers movies got DVD releases in America, but they were kind of bare bones. And in the case of Inframan, it was released to DVD under its proper title of Super Inframan. And I think they did offer the dub track, but it was mastered really low and tinny by comparison. And when Joseph Brenner released it in America, I mean, he spent money on doing a quadraphonic mix for it. You know, they called it Super Infrasound. And
I love that.
I've never gotten to see it in mag stereo, but no one's ever reproduced that, and I'm praying that Arrow can get access to those mag stereo tracks.
That's asking for a lot, especially because it's going to just be the one of 20 or 12 well, or however on there. But if anybody's going to do it, I would trust Arrow.
If I trust
Criterion. Now, if Criterion released a Shaw Brothers collection, you can get about damn guarantee it's going to have everything on there. But Arrow, pretty damn close. But, yeah, so did you pre-order the Shaw Brothers collection?
I have not yet pre-ordered the Shaw collection.
Okay, yeah, I've laid my money down on that. There was no way I was not getting it, so I said I might as well get it while I have money. So, but yeah, so that's about it for.
Arrow announced a couple of nice things. Over the weekend, they announced Phantom of the Mall,
mm-hmm.
and. While they couldn't find high def elements for the alternate footage, but they are going to use their primary high def master of the theatrical version and integrate standard def inserts from the TV and the fan edit to offer these two different cuts of the movie, and so that'll be a great boon to everybody who has wanted to see these. In the best presentation possible, and
Dune 4K is supposedly shipping now,
and Mill of the Stone Women getting a really nice upgrade. This upgrade has been playing the festival circuit. I believe it was. I don't know if it was Fantasia or if it was another fest where I think it played with Kayla's Daco.
Can you hear us, okay, Don, on there? I was trying to. Hopefully you guys can hear us because we can't get too loud where we're at now because we're right next to a speaker, so it'll get a bunch of feedback. Yeah, you know? It'll just be looped sound. So
yeah, if I get too animated talking about something, I'm gonna blow out a few eardrums. So I apologize in advance.
Everything's been sounding good from you, Mark, so far. But yeah, going back, there's the Battle Royale. I don't know what's going on. They're re-releasing it again? I don't know.
Well, they had it's a special just for the edition. UK.
You Wasn't know, it just the UK in the first time?
Possibly.
I was confused when they announced it again. I was like, well.
Yeah, I think at last check, Lionsgate may still control it for the US as a holdover from the old Anchor Bay license. I don't know how many years they have left on that or if they'll bother renewing.
Well, I just don't think they've handled that well, personally. But, I'm a big... We actually had a Anchor Bay tribute show. That was one of the first shows we ever did. So I am a little partial Anchor Bay. So I feel like, man, they got so much stuff there. Do something with it,
Well, I mean...
And they slowly but surely have. I mean,
Well, what happened is Devil Rides when Anchor Bay came on the scene, oh, man, were they great.
We were blind buying Anchor Bay tiles just because they were Anchor Bay.
And then after a couple years, some of the licenses reverted to Bill Lustig, and he took them to Blue Underground. And then, plus Anchor Bay started, stars invested in them. And, when you get too much money, you start thinking, oh, well, let's make our own content. We're paying too much money for all this outside stuff. And the quality went down, and, they stopped being interested in all the quirky indie films that had made them popular in the first place. And then when Lionsgate bought out Stars, that was kind of the death knell. And so whatever... Lionsgate has left over from Anchor Bay is probably not that much because, I think all they may have left is the license on Evil Dead because the Akkad family took their Halloween movies to Shout Factory. These new editions that are coming out fall. That's not a sub license from Lionsgate. That is a direct deal with the Akkads.
Yeah, and we got a Sam Peckinpah, I think, is starting to ship, or people have already started receiving it, but Major Dundee which I've always wanted to see. And it looks like they did a lot of honor to that. You know, it's like they did the big, thick, like, two-disc slipcase thing with that.
Yeah, this edition is going to have the previous theatrical edition and the reconstruction of what survives of Peckinpah's longer cut.
Mark, you know, if you don't mind, you told me a Sam Peckinpah story once.
Oh.
With an axe, or maybe a throwing knife. Why don't you enlighten the audience with that, because that's a great story you have.
It's one of my favorites. As you know, Sam Peckinpah had a very temperamental personality and a volatile temper, and you know, and that's even when he was sober, let alone when he was drinking. And he was having, having a blowout with this producer Michael Dealey, who worked with him a lot. And at one point, as Michael was leaving the room, I may have the weapon wrong, but I always heard it was a hatchet, that Sam picked up a hatchet and threw it at Dealey, and it missed him by inches, and Dealey looked at him and said, "Some days, Sam, you just can't do anything right."
and that's not a story that seems unbelievable in the slightest, if you know anything about Sam Peckinpah. So, but yeah, Sam Peckinpah is one of those directors where I think he's one of the greatest American directors of all time. Yet, a lot of his stuff just seems to kind of it might get put out on Blu-ray, but it'll be a real bare bones Blu-ray. You know what I mean? And nobody's done like a really good box set. They did a Western box set on DVD a long time ago, but
things have been improving. Like, excuse me, during the time that the Twilight Time label was alive, Nick Redman and company were picking up selected Peckinpah titles and creating some nice supplements to them. And more recently, Kino Lorber has been picking up some of those movies that went out of print from Twilight Time and reissuing them and creating new extras for them. The Peckinpah movies that Warner Brothers owns, because between them and the pre-86 MGM library, they have several. They already kind of did a good job on them in the DVD days, so it's just a matter of upgrading the picture quality. The stuff that he did for United Artists that MGM owns and has been resurfacing through Kino and Scorpion, you know, they've been the two Peckinpahs that desperately need an upgrade. One is his finale, The Osterman Weekend.
Yes.
The last release of that, I think, came from Anchor Bay before the Lionsgate takeover.
And Tubi does, if I recall right, I think it was Tubi, somebody has a restored version that's playing, you know, that you can watch, you can stream. So usually that's a sign that something's coming down the pipeline for a Blu-ray release. Yeah.
And then the other one, I mean, I think there may be a blue of it, but it's Cross of Iron, and that has been released by the absolutely Salingerian Mysterians at Hen's Tooth Video. I mean, these people never talk to the press. They never do any promotion. I don't know how they stay in business, and yet somehow they still have some really choice titles locked up under their domain.
And that's a really good movie too, so it's a real shame. But yeah, we have like a bare bones Blu-ray of Wild Bunch, which is pathetic. Then we have a bare bones version of Stray Dog.
Criterion did an upgraded Blu-ray of Straw Dogs.
Oh, they did? Okay, well, great. Well, you know what? Straw Dogs is like one of my least favorite Peckinpah movies, so just because it's just a little bit too disturbing for me.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite Peckinpah is probably Pat Garrett, Billy the Kid, and that one, as far as I know, doesn't have anything going on with that one.
I don't think that has been upgraded to Blu-ray yet. I think that's...
And that's just a crime, because that's like one of the greatest movies. And then the soundtrack. And I wonder if there's anything... Hopefully there's never any issue with you know, oh, hell yeah, that's a great vinyl right there. Look at that, Dune. Toto. Guy just walked by with a Toto vinyl. But, you know, what was I talking about? Oh, yeah, Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid. It's like that soundtrack by Bob Dylan. Hopefully nothing ever gets messed up with that that causes any issues.
I know
he made it just for Pat Garrett, but he did also release an album, so.
Well, I think they ironed out that stuff a long time ago. So
okay,
it's,
good.
It's, you know, since it was created for the movie, it's not one of, it's not facing the problem that a lot of 70s and 80s movies that use needle drop music have faced, which is that they never made deals for home video and all those songs need to be relicensed. And, you know, because record companies are money grubbing scum, they suddenly jack up the price because they think they have you over a barrel.
That's why the Easy Rider, if you're gonna listen to the Easy Rider soundtrack on like Spotify or something like that, it's just dwindling. Like, more and more titles get removed from that soundtrack on Spotify. It's just dwindling.
Yeah, that
it has the most needle drop soundtrack ever.
Well, yeah,
it was like top 40 at the time.
For many years, you could not get Easy Rider on physical media, and then finally, there was a VHS release where they cleared the music, and then, you know, it's been safe ever since. You know, every DVD has been complete. But I remember in the 2000s, they released an expanded soundtrack of the movie. Because, like, the first soundtrack album that came out had switched out a couple of songs. Like, in the movie, you hear the band performing The Weight, but on the soundtrack album, it's the band Smith that covers it because they couldn't afford to license it for the album. But they did an expanded soundtrack on two CDs where they put in all the music. And I think maybe for a while that covered streaming services as well. You know, that I think, to be clear, a lot of these songs, it's not that they're not on Spotify. Like, I'm sure that you can find the bands, The Weight, on Spotify,
right,
but you're
yeah.
not going to be able to find it in a designated Easy Rider playlist.
Right.
Because, you know,
unless somebody makes one.
Yeah, that's, you know, that, you know, when a record company, I don't stream music. I'm a bit of a Luddite that way. I'm outside of watching stuff on YouTube, and, you know, which is technically streaming. But I've noticed that, you know, the traditional soundtrack album as we know it, where, you know, it'll come out on Columbia, but, you know, they'll license a few tracks from Universal and a few tracks from Warner, and it'll, if you look at it on YouTube and you listen to all the tracks, it'll have all the album artwork there. And so it's like, okay, you know, we paid to have our name on this.
Right.
But then sometimes, like, I was looking up the Booksmart soundtrack, and there's only so many songs from that movie that are allowed to use the artwork from the soundtrack album, and then the rest is just some intrepid fan who remembered, oh, that song's in the movie, I'm going to put it in my playlist so that you can get the complete.
Then you have a completely different situation with Nashville's soundtrack, where Robert Altman was just like, we don't need to have that song in there, even though every song from Nashville, as far as I know, was written and performed by the actual actors mm-hmm. performing the song, and then it was made specifically for Nashville.
Yeah.
The movie Nashville, the Robert Altman movie. And then the soundtrack comes out, and I guess they maybe, you know, needed to press it at a small capacity or whatever, but a lot of songs are out. A lot of good songs are not on that
mm-hmm.
album, which stinks. Because I do have the album, and some of my favorite songs just aren't on there.
Well, which one?
Well, you know when they're in the bar and that girl singing...
you mean
since you've gone, that song?
Okay,
that one's my favorite song. And then I don't think they have that Karen Black's her second song on there.
Okay, so they just have the one Karen Black, but not all of her stuff.
It was just like Robert Altman was just like, yeah, let's put these songs, these songs, these songs.
Well, I think that might have been less Robert Altman and more ABC.
True, right, yeah.
Well,
Robert Altman stated that one of his favorite songs is that Since You've Gone. Mm-hmm. And he likes when that girl kind of coughs halfway through it as like a mishap. They recorded it, and then they figured they'd have to take another take, but he was like, oh, I love it.
Yeah, that was probably,
come back, kids, I'm going to tell you a story.
In the 70s, ABC wasn't just a TV network, but they had their own record label. And they were also one of the primary backers of Nashville, along with Paramount. So they owned a chunk of the movie, and they had the soundtrack album rights. And so they probably... Because I'm Easy was a hit. It was a
radio
hit.
Yeah, that's the big one.
So I think they wanted to, we want this album to be successful, so we're only going to put, the choicest tracks that we think might get airplay on it. The soundtrack rights have shifted to Universal Music, and they've done a CD, but I don't think they've ever done an expanded edition with all of the tracks that didn't get used.
Yeah,
but
I need to do that.
About a month or so ago, somebody put out what they called a lost Karen Black album that she had recorded of tracks in various capacities, and the tapes had been molding in her basement, and somebody found them and went to the painstaking trouble of cleaning them up and salvaging them, because it's got a couple of tracks that she recorded for The Picks, the Harvey Hart horror film, and I want to say it might have a song from Nashville in it, but I'm not 100% on that.
That's cool. But yeah, anyways, why were you talking about Nashville?
Soundtracks and licensing and
Nashville's one of my favorite soundtracks. Nashville didn't really like that movie either. They thought it was kind of poking fun at them. I thought it was kind of revealing a truth about all of America, but
It
was a great movie.
No, that ending still chokes me up.
You get chills. If it's the 100th time you've watched it, you get chills. But yeah, check out Nashville by Robert Altman if you can.
Yeah.
I think it's 2.5 hours, but it's incredible. And there's no centralized character. I love that. Robert Altman has a couple films like that where there's 20 different characters, that you're following.
Oh.
And somehow you're able to just keep up no problem. Because you love every single one of them.
I never got to do this in my 20s. I was in an improv group, and one of the games you see most improv groups doing is what they would call genre call, where you get a bunch of suggestions for different types of movies and TV shows, and you have a neutral scene, and then you have to change it according to the genre you've been given. And I always wanted to have a gag where we would do Robert Altman, and the gag would be every member of the group would all come on stage at once and start talking.
And so, he would do, he did that stuff where he had a lot of people talking the same. Joe, you're coming on at some point. We got your mic ready for you, bud. Joe Godden, the owner of the Skyline's dancing right now, live on video.
Yeah. Sorry.
There's no video. You folks that weren't under the tent,
missed it. Since you can't see, he was basically doing a pale imitation of the Jason Biggs dance from American Pie. And
that was. Well, we'll say it was. As far as they know, it was.
Shannon Elizabeth would have appreciated.
I love that scene in that movie. I love that. I got a guilty pleasure with... I'm talking all American Pies. I'm talking Band Camp, Love Book.
The straight-to-video ones? Okay,
yeah, and I'm not even talking about the Naked Mile.
I haven't watched any of those. I've only seen the theatrical editions, but just as the four movie series it is, I'm very fond of it too, and I just really love its central premise that, kind, intelligent, hardworking young people also like to fuck.
Yeah.
That there's outside of Stifler being a chaos agent, there's really no villains in any of the movies. There's no antagonism. It's just
puberty's the villain.
Puberty or self-doubt or just convention or that everybody's just trying to do the best they can, and that sex is considered healthy and fun, and that there's no stigmas attached to it.
Yeah, and as a cult fan and as like a drive-in fan, grindhouse fan, never ever belittle yourself to the point where you're only watching horror and cult and stuff like that. We just love movies, honestly. Mm-hmm. We just love movies. That's simple as that. It's not like we only watch fucking horror, or we only watch movies like Hots and stuff like that. It's like, so never be afraid to watch Fried Green Tomatoes, which is a lesbian cannibal film. just so people are aware.
Okay. I have never seen the movie, but it's only this year that I found out about the cannibalism aspect. I managed to dodge that secret for 20
it is
years.
Kind of a spoiler.
And somebody, finally let the cat out of the bag.
Yeah, so if you ever watch Fried Green Tomatoes, it's awesome. Because there's a bunch of lesbians cannibalizing.
Well, I do a whole podcast about one of the first lesbian filmmakers in the business, so... it's right up my alley.
Yeah. And, nobody ever comes out in the movie, but it's obvious. Come on.
some of that comes from... because I'm gonna be showing my ass and my age here. I turned 52 this year, so...
Oh, that's young.
I'm ancient. But, the woman who originally wrote the book that, the movie's based on was... the comedian Fanny Flagg. And, obviously she's out now, but when I grew up, Fanny Flagg was on television all the time, especially on The Match Game. She was a resident analyst there. And, never really talked about, dating in general, but, when I first found out, her real identity, it's just like, oh, I had no clue. Because... if you watch old episodes of Match Game that she's on, if anything, they're making a lot of jokes about her chest at her expense.
Yeah. But anywho, I think we're going to take a break real quick.
Yeah.
And when we get back, we are going to deep dive into the tonight's lineup, I think.
Yeah.
That'll be a good one. And one thing I want to mention, too, is Sonny Chiba passed away just recently.
Mm-hmm.
And also, Charlie Watts, which I don't know if you know this, but I was actually named after Charlie Watts. My parents are huge Stones fans. I mean, insane. I was at a Stones concert before I was even born. My mom was 6 months pregnant and went to a concert in 89, and actually Don Z, I was talking to Don Z about this. Don Z was at that concert, which is wild. So
I think that was I think that may have been the year that I saw the Stones. It was the Steel Wheels.
Were you there?
Right?
Maybe you were there.
No, I was at Riverfront Coliseum. Stadium in Cincinnati. May it rest in peace.
Right.
Thanks a lot, Marge Schott.
So if we can figure this out here. That's for headphones. Hold on, folks. Not too sure why it wouldn't be. Hold on. Hold on now, people. Oh, I know why.
College radio can be summed up in 5 words. Dead air, dead air.
Mm. Yep. Mm-hmm. So anyways, in honor of Charlie Watts, here we go. Hey, rest in peace.
Hey! bitter fruit. Yes, I got the desert in my toenail. Uh-huh. And I hid your feet inside my boots.
He's a tough man. To let him live is taking a chance.
Since he knows our secret, he has to be killed.
Terry Sigouri, 6'6" of half-breed fury. But he's got a little problem. He has a hard time making friends.
You tell that bitch who sent you here how sorry I am I can no longer be her friend.
The Street Fighter. If you've got to fight, fight dirty.
Now we're recording this, and you can listen to it on Anchor or Spotify or iTunes or wherever you want to listen to it on Facebook. It's pretty soon, probably YouTube. I'll probably get on YouTube soon. So, now what we want to do is kind of go over the lineup for tonight. And Mark, if you have any interesting stories you want to chime in on these while I read these off, that would be great, because I know you have a lot to say about these movies. But so tonight, we're, of course, Sammy Terry's on stage. Everybody loves Sammy Terry. Now, what are your thoughts on Sammy Terry since you're now this, you know, stater?
Well, I have to show Sammy Terry respect because when I was a youngin' in Cincinnati, Ohio, my horror host was the Cool Ghoul, a.k.a. Dick Von Hain. And, you know, I grew up on him presenting scary movies over the weekend and doing commercial remotes and such. And when Sammy Terry had one of his big anniversaries, the Cool Ghoul sent him a tape, you know, congratulating him. So... anybody who is still able to, you know, motivate people into, you know, watching scary stuff either on television or online or in the theater, you know, they're doing a great job. In the words of the great Bob Wilkins, watch horror movies, keep America strong.
Nice. And Sammy Terry's on stage. I don't want to miss that. And then we are going to start the show off with Curse of the Demon. And also, if you want to see a Curse of the Demon poster, Ken's got a great... That's another thing. We want to talk about the vendors. Ken has an amazing store he's got going on over there. He's got one. He's got original one sheets. Now, the Curse of the Demon is a reproduction.
Yeah.
But it's a really well-done reproduction.
Yeah, because to be clear... The original UK title was Night of the Demon, and it was retitled for America, and I think maybe about 5 to 10 minutes were taken out. More recently, they, like in the 90s, those were restored thanks to my good friend Mike Schlesinger when he was at Sony Repertory. And Night of the Demon is, you know, one of the great black and white atmosphere classics. Jacques Tourneur at the helm. If you're a Kate Bush fan like I am, her song Hounds of Love opens with a sample from the movie It's in the Trees. And of course, every Rocky Horror person knows that Dana Andrews said prunes gave him the runes, and passing them used lots of skill. So...
Yeah, and... that's always a very atmospheric sort of fun movie. And then we are going to have Sammy Terry on the stage again. Then we're going to do Black Sunday. Now, Black Sunday is really moody, black and white movie. And, of course, we were talking about Barbara Steele earlier. I love Barbara Steele. She's at her prime here. Don, there's a couple people I know that met Barbara Steele. I've never had the pleasure, but they say she's wonderful. And this movie is just really foreboding and dark. And I think maybe it could probably belong on that full chorus that we were talking about. I think so.
Oh,
I love
yeah.
that. I love that movie.
Mm-hmm.
But that movie's coming up.
Yeah, and now, do you know which version we're going to be getting tonight?
No, that needs to be... That's a Joe. Well, I wish we had Joe on.
Well, for listeners who aren't aware, when the movie was... the movie was made by Mario Bava in Italy, you know, shooting in phonetic English, but it was initially, there was a dub track initially created, and the initial export was called The Mask of Satan. But then when AIP bought it for America, they commissioned a new dub track with a new music score by Les Baxter. And so lots of generations growing up watching it on TV got the AIP version, and then in the 90s, the rights reverted back to the Italian producer Alfredo Leone, and he started circulating the original English export cut, The Mask of Satan. Now, thanks to the Blu-ray era, you can now get both versions on Blu-ray, because it's one of those things where Leone owns the movie, but MGM, as inheritors of the AIP library, own that cut of the movie, but they came to a detente. So, whichever one you get to see, they're all great. You know, it's just, you get an embarrassment of riches in that you have two different ways to enjoy it.
Yeah, and so, Joe's right here. If he comes closer, we'll ask him. Maybe he knows. And, anyways, after Black Sunday, we're going to have The Exorcist. Little unknown classic. No, I'm just kidding. I think everybody's probably seen that. That's here. But still, I think The Exorcist is a great... I'll never dog it just because it's popular. And it's a great movie.
One of the strengths of The Exorcist is that Friedkin had just come off of making The French Connection when he made it. And The Exorcist, it, especially in the longer version that came out in the 2000s and for the most part has been the dominating cut of the movie now, a lot of it unfolds kind of like a detective story in that they are trying to seriously look at why all these things would be happening, you know, eliminating every single explanation in the physical realm, you know, going back to Sherlock Holmes. When you have eliminated the impossible, whatever remains, however improbable, must be the truth. So that, you know, that pursuit of the truth and, you know, the butting up against superstition that was supposed to be done with by the 70s, you know, there's that whole moment where Jason Miller, you know, was asked, what do I do for an exorcist? Well, first you build a time machine and you take her back to the 1700s. So,
yeah, and William Friedkin touches upon this a lot with his movies. But, you know, one of my favorite William Friedkin's movies, and you can actually get it at the Dollar General for like $2. You should definitely pick it up on Blu-ray, is To Live and Die in L.A.
Oh, boy.
And talk about soundtracks. That's got one of the best soundtracks there mm-hmm. is. But he's done a lot of good stuff. Sorcerer and, well, you know, obviously The Exorcist. He's got some stinkers, but I think To Live and Die in L.A. is a masterpiece.
Oh, yeah. I have seen that multiple times in a theatrical setting and a couple of times with him to talk about the experience.
And he's pretty cocky. I know that interview, that extensive interview that was done with him really turned off a lot of people. I like the guy. I will say, if you're going to watch that Shudder documentary that he, you know, talks about The Exorcist or whatever, you know, make sure, before you watch that, make sure that you watch Citizen Kane, make sure you watch The Killing, and what else? He ruins a whole bunch of really classic, Maltese Falcon, make sure you watch that. He ruins all these movies in like the first 5 minutes of this interview. So you really got to make sure you watch those movies before, because he's going to ruin them for you. And those are movies you don't want to have Citizen Kane ruin for you.
Yeah,
you don't want to have the ending of that ruin.
Yeah,
for you.
The
whole movie's worthless at that point.
Yeah, he's taking liberties, assuming that most people know them through cultural osmosis, but in the process, he's taking away the excitement of a first time discovery.
Yeah, so. Exorcist, I'm sure there's a lot of fans for that. I would say that's probably the big draw of the night. And then after that, we get Evil Speak with Clint Howard.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty recognizable actor, I would say. He was also in Silent Night, Deadly Night 4. And mm-hmm. The Tingler's in there, too. They ripped off The Tingler. So there's your connection back to Silent Night, Deadly Night 4.
Oh, yeah. Evil Speak was it was part of a wave, not an intentional wave, but it seemed like at one time there were all these teenager Bonds with Satan movies that came out at the same time. Because when Evil Speak, shortly after Evil Speak came out, is when Fear No Evil came out. With Stefan Arngren,
yeah,
and they both take place at these elite schools where there's a persecution victim who makes a deal with the devil and takes revenge on all of his tormentors. Fear No Evil had the better soundtrack, of course.
Yeah, and this one has sort of that. Computer, early computer.
Oh yeah,
Fear. I don't know what that's got to be called. Something like early. You know how we had like the Satanic Panic in the 90s.
This would be like early computer techno panic.
Yeah, techno panic. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, the emergence of the home computer, and is like, what kind of sorcery is this?
Yeah. So that movie's a lot of fun, and then I mean, this is my favorite of the night. I'm going to be honest. I would say Black Sunday, and then Sage Cheerleaders is a ton of fun.
Oh yeah,
it's everything you want it to be, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So that's that one. You got to stay up pretty late, but you know, if you're one of these people that's seen The Exorcist a million times, and you're not like a diehard fan, you know, maybe catch a couple of Z's during that one, or maybe even, you know, God forbid, you speak if you have to.
Yeah, Satan's Cheerleaders is Graydon Clark. Maybe not the greatest grindhouse auteur of the 70s, but always an entertaining one. You know, you look at any of his movies like Joysticks or Uninvited. You know, there's always a lot of glee and gusto taking place in there, and plus you've got all manner of great character actors like Yvonne DiCarlo in the cast, you know, backing up, you know, the, you know, four beautiful girls, you know, taking the lead, and you know, it's a truthful movie. There is Satan and there are cheerleaders. What more do you want?
Yep. And I think they play a football game with the boys on the beach at the beginning, right? Am I thinking of the right movie?
I know, you know,
see,
they are football cheerleaders,
girl.
So
yeah, so I love that sequence, if that is the right movie. And, Saints Cheerleaders. VCI put that out on Blu-ray, if you want to pick that up after this. I think it's a pretty common Blu-ray to find. And VCI does a lot of sales, so I would just wait for a sale, probably, to get that. And I'll tell you, I think this lineup is really strong. Flipside had nothing to do with this lineup. Now, we did get to pick a couple of titles for the Pandemonium weekend,
mm-hmm.
which I think that's going to be the best. Well, obviously, I'm going to say that this Pandemonium is going to be the best Pandemonium ever. And
sure.
Remember that's considering that Pandemonium 2018. I got to, you know, I was Linnea Quigley's chauffeur, so
mm-hmm.
But this one is better because Savage Streets is finally going to play at the Skyline. The fact that Joe was able to get that to play here is a miracle.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
He pretty much had to converse with ex-mob members to get that movie to play.
Mm-hmm.
So nobody else is going to be playing Savage Streets before or after this.
Well,
so
well,
want to come.
Well, no, there is one. Well, maybe not in the Midwest. In L.A.
Well, that's all that matters, though.
In L.A., my friends at the New Beverly in September are doing a whole salute to L.A. on film, and they're doing a triple feature of, I'm getting the order wrong, but it's going to be Savage Streets, Angel, and Vice Squad.
God, that's a great lineup. Well, we paved the way, though. We paved the way.
Mm-hmm.
But,
And I should, you know, let me take a little victory lap over the fact that I have been on the, I think almost every edition of Savage Streets that's been on DVD or Blu-ray.
Yeah, Mark is on the commentary tracks for the available. This one's available, so I'm going to advertise this one. But if you get the Code Red Savage Streets Blu-ray, he helps host a commentary track.
Well, someone else is hosting. I'm just kind of being a wise guy through it. But.
Okay. Well, either way, and he's on the he's on a commentary track for Mac and Me. So.
Oh yeah.
Wow! I had him sign my Mac and Me Blu-ray.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I know there's a lot of Mac and Me fans, diehard Mac and Me fans out there.
I haven't listened to my commentary since I taped it, so I don't know how much the lawyers at MGM excised before it hit the street, but you know, when I was in the studio with Stuart Raffel, that was a fun time.
Yeah, a favorite podcast of mine, Dead Pit, did a commentary track for The Madman, and I don't think it ever saw the light of day, unfortunately. So sometimes that happens. But it sounds like your stuff was just more censored than anything.
Well, MGM has been most notorious for just excising whole bits of stuff out of commentary tracks. I don't know what they're concerned about. I think you listen to the commentary track for Fun City's edition of Jeremy, which is really great because it's Robbie Benson and Glynis O'Connor reminiscing, and some really smart people talking about its importance. But every so often, there's these blank spaces in the commentary where clearly it's like, oh, you can't say that, and and you listen to what the context around the blank space was, and it feels like, were they really saying anything particularly controversial?
And they have that disclaimer too. I mean, that should cover their ass, I would think. Mm. But, yeah, tonight's going to be fun. Hopefully you guys are going to stay up late. I haven't gotten any sleep since Thursday, so I'll try. Just got, you just got to do some lines and hope for the best.
Yeah, have another Mountain Dew.
Yeah. But I'll tell you, the Skyline, obviously, it's my home drive-in, so I have to say, but Skyline's the best drive-in there is. I mean, I've been over to the other drive-ins that are considered the best. There's no way. And the food here, so Mark and I have tried the Shout Out the Devil. And I regretted eating that one. It was good, but I don't do good with hot sauce. And then have you tried any other ones? Not yet.
Let's see.
There's the Sammy Terry one, which I love that one.
Yeah, I haven't done the Sammy Terry. I haven't done the Linda Blair. I haven't done.
If we want to what? Wrap it up.
No,
we're getting a wrap.
Announce it.
Oh yeah. So yeah, we were just talking about him actually.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Everybody, Sammy Terry is going to be on stage in 10 minutes.
Yes, and as we were saying, we have a specialty menu item in Sammy Terry's honor.
It
is a tenderloin sandwich with pizza sauce and mozzarella. So it's going to be enough calories to send you to the cemetery if you're not watching yourself already.
Yeah, and you know what you should do? So Sammy Terry's about to start 10 minutes. You got plenty of time. Go grab yourself a Sammy Terry beer. Then go grab yourself a Sammy Terry loin. And then watch Sammy Terry. That would just be, I don't know what's going to happen if you do all that. I mean, that might open some sort of portal or something.
Mm-hmm.
Some Indiana porthole. Like, who knows? But, yeah, there's Sammy Terry beer from Scarlet Lane, which Scarlet Lane's really great. There's two Scarlet Lanes in Indianapolis. I usually go to the McCordsville one, and I board game there every Tuesday. So I haven't been out to the other one, but I think the other one's a little more popular. But it's kind of like a horror-themed brewery.
Okay.
And they have that Sammy Terry beer. And if you're into IPAs, they have one of the best ones. It's called, shoot. I can't remember it now. There's a lady that knows what I get, so I haven't ordered the drink in a long time. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, I've had some IPAs, and, well, they've certainly tasted scary, so how does this one stack up? I mean, good horror or just horrible?
Oh, no, it's one of my favorite beers ever.
Okay.
Yeah. But, you know, with Sammy Terry, if you haven't checked him out, you gotta just go down to the stage. It's right down there by the screen. And he's ready to go. And he's a legend around these parts. There's a funny thing that happens if you ever go to a convention, is that people, if you go to a convention here in Indiana, people will be lined up for the hot celebrity, you know, like Linda Blair, let's say. There'll be a line for, you know, Linda Blair and Lene Quigley and whoever. Well, Sammy Terry will show up and, you know, set table up and he's ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
People ditch the lines that they're in to go see Sammy Terry.
Mm.
So that says a lot. I mean, that speaks volumes. And then these celebrities are like, well, who the hell is this guy, you know? Well, in Indiana, we all know. You know, we all know and love Sammy Terry, but you know, ULA folk, you know.
Oh, no, that's a beautiful thing. You know, that's respect for your horror elders.
Yeah, and he always puts on a great show. He usually has contests and stuff like that, so you're only going to check it out. Don't be scared. Raise your hand for the scream contest. You know, all that kind of stuff. But yeah, get a Sammy Terry loin, get a Sammy Terry beer. Go see Sammy Terry. I'm sure that's allowed.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be kind of messy, but hey. We're good at that kind of stuff. But yeah, so we're probably going to shut down here for the night. Let you guys enjoy the movies. Let you guys enjoy Sammy Terry. We've given you plenty of movies to add to your watch list, I think.
Oh, yeah. I mean, between all the upcoming new releases, all of the catalog titles we've just talked about on our own, you know, if you're looking for stuff to watch, you know, just rewind, fast forward, you know, pause wherever you need to and jot them all down.
Yeah, we'll probably try to add the movies mentioned into the list for the episode. So, but anyways, we're gonna let, as always, we're gonna let Mark do a closing speech, and let me get this pulled up for you, Mark. Here.
All right, as the sun is setting, we're about to play the unofficial national anthem of the drive-in, and that is Barry Dvorzon's San Antone from the Rolling Thunder soundtrack. So all drive-in aficionados should be standing at attention with their hands over their hearts. And if you're not, well, you'll reach that point at some point in the future, because drive-in folk, especially those who adore horror, are the cornerstone of true movie love, because you trek outside of the comforts of your own home in order to be with a bunch of people in an outdoor setting, amongst the elements, amongst nature, to be entertained. And horror fans especially are some of the most loyal and open-minded people out there, because you'll take a chance on a movie with no stars or recognizable names, but as long as it's going to deliver you a good jump scare, you'll take a chance, and you've made the day of a bunch of scrappy people in the Midwest who woke up with a little money, a camcorder, a coffee pot, and a drink. So give yourself a round of applause, and remember, with eternal vigilance, the drive-in will never die.
Sitting here and looking out the window, thinking just how good things used to be. Well, I might be coming back to only memories over San Antonio. They sure look good to me.